Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Mike Sniffer Pippets.
Mike Sniffer Pippets? Who?
Mike Sniffer Pippets who? How many Mike Sniffer Pippets do you know? Come on, let me in. It's cold out here. Jeez.
TBTL.
I'm gonna fool you.
You talk better than you fool.
I'll fool you up real nice.
You couldn't fool your mother on the foolingest day of your life if you had an electrified fooling machine.
This is not your mama's podcast. This is too beautiful to live.
Are you trying to seduce me?
I'm trying to seduce you.
You guys are so fun. Just relentlessly fun. I keep thinking, when are they going to stop being fun? And the answer is never.
No, a joke's not a joke unless everyone can laugh at it.
I don't think my brother's that much funny, but I got to give him some credit for that one. That's a pretty good spoof.
Well, good morning and welcome to a Monday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live, and your place for
intimate conversation, self-disclosure, and a little music thrown in, too.
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
I'm an activist and house party enthusiast.
Speaking of house parties, I'm coming to you this morning from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, which is perched atop Alabama Hill in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Looking out over Lake Whatcom and Squalicum Mountain as the sun rises. Let's be honest, I'm actually not looking out over those things. I'm looking into a curtain that's pulled closed here in the broadcast center because the sun is shining directly into my eyes, and I'm either going to have to do the show with sunglasses or I'll pull the curtain closed. I had not thought about this when we moved the showtime to early in the morning, not thought about the sunrise implications. I know there are harder jobs out there than hosting a podcast while the sun shines into your eyes, but I'm just saying this is news to me that this is going to be happening most days for the next few months. I mean, of course, I'll take it. Boy, I'll take it. It's a beautiful weekend of weather. Hope today's going to be nice as well, but I'm just saying that I'm kind of, you know, I'm overcoming the odds here to bring you episode 2,869 in a collector series. We got a lot to talk about.
Let the fun begin.
It is April 1st. You know what that means.
How about like pranking an animal?
We're going to be pranking animals left and right. And all kinds of hilarious spoofs and lies and tricks. Not really. We're not into that on this show, but we are into semi-informative April Fool's related quizzes that we've nicked from the New York Times. So I'm going to subject my friend, the longest-running Cobro of this show, to an April Fool's quiz. It's a quiz about sort of great pranks throughout history. It'll be informative. That's really all I can say for it. I don't think it's really that funny, and it's barely informative. But it is going to be something we get into coming up just in a few minutes. Also, we've got emails, and we've got V-mails. And we've got this guy, the aforementioned longest-running Cobro of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. Let's see, what else can I tell you about him? He might have tacos for dinner tonight. He's not quite sure yet. He's doing the work. He's baby-stepping. And he can only hear Yanni. He's Andrew.
Please don't be mean to Cleveland.
Walsh. And he joins me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning.
Hi.
I have not had a chance, as you'd probably expect, to like kind of scan the tweeters and, you know, all of the usual blog spaces where spoofs would be a spoofing on this sacred April Fool's Day. Is there anything buzzing out there in regards to April Fools? Anybody really zinging them? Zinging us?
I feel like this is the year that we collectively as a society have kind of given up on April Fools, and I think that's a good thing.
I know it's still the last week of March, but is it too early to say April Fools?
I don't even know what that is. It was just in my audio system under the search terms Fools. Would also have accepted.
I have been pitying fools for 28 years, Bill, and it's never personal.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's great.
I haven't seen any news stories about, like, you know, a great spoof that was pulled off somewhere. But I did see some people pushing back on brands trying to get in on it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I saw somebody wrote on Twitter, like, something to the effect of, we get it, it's April 1st, brands, like, layoff. And I'm just imagining, I don't know this is happening, I imagine somehow KFC is involved. That's just my guess.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems, you know, like, there's these, like, these real thirsty, online, envelope-pushing brands, or more, maybe more accurately, envelope-pushing ad agencies that are hired by these brands. It just seems like a prime time for them.
I would say the only fake news story that I kind of enjoyed, because I'm trying to think, I think it might have even gotten me at the beginning of it, although I like to think I figured it out by the end, was NPR's, because before it became really trendy, NPR always did one fakey story on April Fool's Day, I think going back a long time, and they did one about the slow internet movement, and this is like 10 years ago or something.
And that's pretty good, actually.
The people that they, you know, quote unquote, interviewed for this thing, talking about like kind of just preserving like the real spirit of the internet by using dial-up modems, like... You could, I mean, maybe I'd be one of those people now. I just bought a cassette player, you know, like there was some believability in there.
There's about a 80 to 90% chance at some point I've come on this show extolling the virtues of going back to a dial-up mode.
Sure.
Sure that I've tried at some point to reorient my life around that. Like, Andrew, I'm just going to get a flip phone. I'm going to get a StarTAC and a dial-up modem, and I'm never eating another carb, and I am going to be doing great.
All I need is a dot matrix printer and all this shit will work itself out.
And that's all I need. Hey, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good. Not tons to report. Kept an eye on the baseballs. Got to get together with some friends. It was a fun. I'm enjoying, and not to turn this into no point conversion, but I will just say I am enjoying the baseball season so far. Very surprisingly so. They've been keeping us on the edge of our seat, those Seattle Mariners. So that's been great. And I just like this season because, I don't know, this is like really annoying to Genevieve, but what I like about it is you start to kind of subtly structure, I don't know, baseball gives a structure to the spring and summer that I like, right? Like kind of what you're kind of doing between games. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of games. You're not going to watch every one. It's not like Football Sunday where you have to do media blackouts and try to DVR shit. Like, but just kind of knowing, well, the game's on at 6. So, yeah, if I do this, then, yeah, I can be done by that time. It's just a nice feeling.
I as we got in the car, we took Rudy for a walk out in the like woods yesterday, and then we got back in the car, Carrie and I, and
that's my wife.
I said, oh, and I like turned on the radio, and it was the Mariners. She goes, and it begins.
Yeah,
like this is now, you know, something that you. It's nice to orient your day around it, and it's also, as our friend Chris Hayes said on Twitter, every year baseball season comes back, and I'm like, hell yes. And then a day later, I'm like, oh, right, it's weird that 6 months out of the year, my mood is profoundly affected by this completely meaningless enterprise I can't control. And then I laid down a sick burn on him that said, looks like someone's team is not 5-1 and on their way to a World Series championship.
Wow. How'd he respond? How are the Cubbies doing, actually? I don't know.
They're 1-2, I think. But it was like... Yesterday was, we get these days in the Northwest, kind of like a, I guess you call it a spring preview. Like we're, you know, we'll soon probably settle back into some gloomy, rainy times, but you'll get like a couple of just sunny days really early in the spring. And like yesterday I mowed the lawn and then I set up a hammock in the backyard. It's actually like a camping hammock that you can sleep in it. You know, its idea is like if you're out and you don't want to set up a tent, you can string this thing between a couple of trees and actually like sleep in it, kind of like a tent. But I wanted to test it out. So I set it up in the backyard and I'm in the hammock and the animals are just like hanging out with me. They're quite mystified at what this hammock is, but you know, they're going to go with it. And I'm listening to the Mariners and I'm texting with you guys and you know, the smell of fresh cut grass is in the air and I'm in a hammock and it was just like, this is an extremely pleasant experience for me on a Sunday.
That sounds perfect. That's right. That fresh cut grass you smelled, it was your own fresh cut grass, huh? You told me on Friday that you were going to be firing up the old lawnmower. Tell me everything. Leave no detail out.
Turned out the fresh cut grass I smelled along the way was my own, Andrew. I'm just going to keep bringing that joke up. I was very happy. You and maybe one to two of the other listeners will care about this. But it's either me talking about this or the dream I had last night.
You are boring me to death, and I am already dead. You're boring me back to death.
So maybe let's go with this. I was very, very excited yesterday, Andrew, because the lawnmower started up right away.
Nice.
After months, just kind of in this like a yard kind of shed area that we have. Now, I bought a new lawnmower last year, and I will tell you that I found it to be a little disappointing. I think when I put the gas that I put in it last year initially, I think maybe had gone bad. It was the lawnmower was like revving in an odd way and kind of not running smoothly. And I was kind of pissed because I spent a few hundred bucks on this lawnmower and I was all excited. And then it wasn't working. But then I waited too long to take it back. So now I was just stuck with it. And but I managed to run that bad gas through the lawnmower and now it runs great. And this was the first spring where I've had like a nice lawnmower to start the spring with. And so every other year, when spring comes around, it's time to start mowing the lawn again. I got to block out half of a day for just futzing with the lawnmower to get it running again. There's spark plug maintenance. There's pouring, you know, there's like trying to clean out the like the carburetor. There's just like all this stuff to it. And then finally it starts. Like our last lawnmower had our friend Jenny's ex-husband's name written on it because literally that's where we got it from. It was her lawnmower that had belonged, I guess, to him or them together when they were married. And then I was using it for years. And it was like every year it was like, this isn't going to start up again. So it was like yesterday, rolled that bad boy out, literally like two pulls on the cord and it was started right.
Oh, nice. Did you prime it? Did you push the prime button? I haven't mowed a lawn in a long time, which is why I'm really trying to turn this talk about lawn mowing into some sort of dirty phone talk because I think I miss it a little bit.
You want me to whisper this? It doesn't have a little you don't prime it. You don't press anything. That's what scared me, Andrew, because that's the solution to everything. I wish I had one of those in life. Just like a little rubber bubble that had gas or whatever I needed to just like, because when you like the lawnmower won't start, you're just like, well, let me just keep pushing this thing.
Yep.
See if that just injecting more gas into the situation fixes it. Yep. It never does. I probably flood the engine. That's probably the whole problem. But it feels like you're doing something. And I wish there was like, you know, I guess you could call it the easy button. I wish that button existed in more elements of my life where I was like, huh, this podcast isn't interesting right now. Let me just keep pressing this and see if it gets better.
Oh, shit. We flooded it. I think we flooded the show a long time ago. I hate to say it.
Oh, my God. Still not recovered.
I guess it must be satisfying having a lawnmower that you don't have to prime because you can trust that it'll just start on the first or second pull. But then I do feel you're losing something. And now I sound like the guy in the slow internet story. Well, I'm part of the slow lawnmower movement. We just feel that, you know, you should have to spray starting fluid into the carburetor and push the prime button exactly 12 and a half times before it starts.
But see, that scared me because I was like, if this doesn't start, I literally had this thought, Andrew, you'll appreciate this. I rolled the lawnmower out. I looked at it, and I was like, this is the time where I usually start furiously pressing this little weird. And for folks that don't mow lawns or you don't know what we're talking about, on a lot of lawnmowers, there's like just this little – we're calling it a button, but really it's almost like a rubber what would you call it? It's like a little pouch that gasoline actually collects in, and when you want to – Right? Is that's right. The gasoline kind of collects in there, and then when you want to put more of it into the motor to try to get it running or to try to, you know, get it started, you press this little pouch. You smash it down, and it's very satisfying. It's like
I don't know. I mean, you think that there's actually gas collecting inside the little bulb there that we push? I thought it was just activating something.
The one that I was using, I believe so, because I could kind of feel a little liquid behind it. And it was also, from a tactile standpoint, very satisfying.
Yes.
I can't lie to you. And that smell of gas. Yep. So when I rolled this one out this year, I was like, okay, here we go. It's time to start messing with this little thing. And then I was like, this doesn't have that. Okay, now what if this doesn't start? I have no – that was it. That was my plan B. That was plan B through Z.
Right.
And now I don't have that. So, oh, my God, this better start. Like, it was like a car that's so futuristic that you open the hood, it's like a laptop under there. You're like, well, I cannot fix this if this doesn't work. I'm just screwed. And, that baby started right up. So
fantastic. That sounds great.
It was a very nice Sunday here. And then a weird night, late night, sleep time, because I had a dream that...
Oh, we're getting to it.
I mean, I just throw it in real quick. It's because, as we know, the listeners are somewhat divided on describing dreams. And I have historically been very not into it, but I've come around on it, Andrew.
Will you allow us to... I mean, if we're going to do it, can we do it properly at least?
All right. Absolutely.
You look like a dream catcher came to life.
Oh, wow, Dream Court.
Yeah, so I guess we're taking you to Dream Court. Sorry about that. But now you're on trial, so let's hear it.
I was not Mirandized, so I'm kind of... This is a little bit out of the blue. Did I have a chance to retain counsel? Did I mean, you know, where what's going on here? The dream was I, for some reason, was, I guess, invited, granted an interview with the current president of the United States, who the listeners may be familiar with.
That's it's not Obama.
After
right,
Obama.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And
yeah,
before Beto. So whatever that guy's name was, it's so hard to remember now, years later. But I was for some reason invited to do an interview, but it was highly informal in that we were in his hotel room just like hanging out. And the whole time we were like really broing down and I was seeing this other side of him and I was very disturbed that I was like kind of enjoying hanging out with him. Like I was wanting him to like me and we were just kind of like, and I could feel myself saying a few things. Like we weren't talking about politics. We were just literally like two bros broing it up. And I felt myself being kind of like, this guy's actually kind of more fun to hang out with than I thought he would be. And then wanting him to like think I was cool so I could it was a dream, so I don't remember the specifics, but I just remember basically kind of like selling myself out in a few times or selling out my beliefs to just kind of be like sort of like when I met the actual Howard Schultz and I didn't yell at him about the Sonics. Instead I just talked to him about dog maintenance. Like I wanted the current president to think I was cool, I guess. Like I didn't speak any truth to any power. And I was mad at myself, but I was also really digging it. And then I was also thinking, this will be a great story on TBTL tomorrow, but nobody's going to believe it happened because, like, this is crazy. I'm just hanging out with this guy. And, nobody will believe it happened because it didn't. And also, it didn't make a great story on TBTL because it was a dream.
That is the judge's hammer of dream.
What is the judge? What is the ruling? Are you the judge in this?
I think so. I think the original idea of Dream Court was we would sometimes maybe call BS on some people's dreams when people were sending in dreams to us, and we thought, don't know, that sounds a little too clever. Isn't that how Dream Court started?
Right. Probably.
I think
somebody knows. One of the listeners will tell us.
I am not going to describe it because it would be very, very difficult to describe, but I had an incredibly rare bad dream on Sunday morning, and it was one of those that you remember really well because, you know, you've kind of woken up. I woke up probably around 7 or something naturally, maybe read for an hour, then fell back asleep at 8, and it was terrible, and I woke up. I couldn't shake it for a long time, like several hours until I finally got out of the house and I went and I met with my community group, and like that kind of took that change of scenery and being around people and having stuff to do finally took me out of it. And then after that, I was driving home. I'm like, man, I'm glad that thing finally shook. But Genevieve said, I woke up and I was like, Veeves, that was just terrible. I just had the worst dream. Like I can't even tell you how dark and awful I felt for a big chunk of the day. And Genevieve said that I was talking in my sleep too, which I've never heard that I've done that before. So, because there was a lot of shouting, I was doing a lot of yelling. It was a very, very ugly dream. Oof. And I must have been talking in my sleep. And then that, you're always like, what did I say? And I'm not worried that I said anything embarrassing or I'm just curious. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's vain, but if I'm talking in my sleep, I kind of want to know what that sounded like.
Let me just, let's try to, here, before we go to the break, let's end this with a very solid April Fool's Day spoof from the actor Kyle MacLachlan. MacLachlan? How would you say Kyle?
I say it differently every time, and I kind of say it quietly so that nobody will correct me, because I don't know. Kyle MacLachlan, I think.
Kyle MacLachlan.
I think that's how
from among other places, Twin Peaks. He says on Twitter, "Friends, I've decided that I will only be drinking iced coffee. I am so sorry to disappoint, but my new tagline moving forward will be damn fine coffee and ice cold."
Instead of piping.
And then there's a photo of him holding holding an iced coffee. It's like a rudimentary photoshopped. I only have time for, and then coffee is crossed out and it says iced coffee.
Ah, like a real dank meme. I learned that recently. I didn't know that that's what the dank and dank meme is. Did you know that it's a very specific kind? I thought it was just like you say like dank meme and it means like, hey man, that's just like a real killer meme. But no, it actually means like as crappily produced as possible by just like, you know, crossing out words and making it just as janky as possible. Does everybody already know that? I didn't know that.
I assumed dank meme just was a way of saying sick meme, like good meme. I didn't know that there was an intentional kind of, you know, intentionally lousy kind of look to it. Although that would make sense because there's all that like, oh man, it's just so many layers and so deep and so beyond my understanding of what it is. But so much stuff that has to do now with like anime and things where it's just like a blurry picture of Spider-Man. And then, you know, like there'll be some weird words that are just kind of like written on there. Like I'll keep using this word. It's very rudimentary. And that's probably got to be kind of a dank meme, I guess. Like
that whole world,
remember a while ago, it was like this, a Japanese animation character that had their hands out, like they were kind of holding or juggling or catching things. And those things would have, you know, had been kind of whited out and then like new things written over them. And it's just like, I mean, I do not have the time or energy to see any of those things as they're kind of emerging from the primordial soup that is, I guess, what, Reddit or 4chan or something. I just see them when they end up in like the New York Times or on NPR. Which, speaking of which, let's take a break. Let's just do this. Let's take a break and then I'll decide if I want to try to talk about this other story before we get to the April Fool's quiz. Speaking of NPR, this is the reason that it came to my mind. I heard a piece on NPR on Friday about, do you know this song, Old Town Road?
I don't think so.
There's a whole thing around it. And I feel embarrassed that I'm finding out about, you know, sort of popular emerging music from an All Things Considered interview, because that's rarely the cutting edge of these things, Peace and Love, to my actual child who works there. But I did. It's a very interesting story about the nature of country music and what constitutes a country music song. Anyway, maybe we'll talk about that after the break. No matter what, we do need to take a break. Let's do it right now, and then we'll be back with more TBTL.
Who's gonna dry your big blue eyes day after day? Who's gonna jump when you say frog? Who's gonna bow and scrape after I've gone away? Who's gonna kiss you and who's gonna miss you?
I like this, but I think I like All Things from the, like, was this from the 60s or 70s?
My guess is the 60s. This is Buck Owens. You know way more about this stuff than I do. It's called Who's Gonna Mow Your Grass, which is why I picked it. Still didn't say it. Apparently, it was used on the House of 1,000 House of 1,000 Corpses soundtrack. The House of 1,000 Corpses.
Welcome to the House of 1,000 Corpses.
I don't know why that's so fun. That's like me saying Cooperston instead of Cooperstown, which I still call it, by the way. And now I think I must always call it the House of 1,000 Corpses. Anyway, I could see who did that. Rob Zombie directed that. And I could see using this kind of old school I don't know how you describe it, but this old school movie juxtaposed in some really horrific modern things. That makes sense to me. I'm sure it was very trippy.
I like that song a lot, by the way. I will never see House of 1,000 Corpses or House of 1,000 Corpses, because you want to talk about bad dreams. That would not be the movie for me, because I'm sure some, like you said, some horrible things happening while that music's playing. Like,
yeah.
I get it. We put the kind of upbeat music behind something very upsetting happening, and it gives it an extra weird vibe.
Yeah.
I don't need that extra weird vibe in my brain.
Nope.
The listeners probably don't need this in their brain. Me trying to talk about Lil Nas X and Old Town Road on the fly. But I'm going to give it a shot here, Andrew. This is a horror film called This Topic. So on Friday, I heard a piece on All Things Considered about this song called Old Town Road that was made by a hip hop artist out of Atlanta named Lil Nas X. It's called Old Town Road, and it got super duper popular, and it was on the country music charts. It actually debuted, I forget where, but pretty high up the charts. And then Billboard took it off of country music, and there's been the charts, because they say it does not meet enough of the requirements of being a country song. And there's a lot of people saying, is this because it's a black guy? Is this because it's kind of a hip hop song? Like, what makes a country song a country song? So can we start by can you see if you can find Old Town Road? I was listening to it yesterday. I don't think it's inappropriate at all. I believe it or not, I don't think there's any swears in it.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Oh, it looks like it. And it's a tight little song. It's like just like a minute 53.
Yes.
Oh,
well, it was part of this is where I'm going to truly disappoint the listeners once again. I don't understand TikTok, Andrew, but I see TikTok mentioned. Mm-hmm. It's some kind of social media thing that I am very much not informed on. I'm just reading from Time Magazine. That's the other place I get all of my breaking hip hop news.
Not Reader's Lil Nas Digest X anymore.
Hip hop in real life. I would read that. Life in these United Beats. Come through. Lil Nas X's path to success might not have been possible just 2 years ago. His song caught fire. This, by the way, he made the song in SoundCloud. He's one of those guys. His song caught fire not on the radio airwaves, but as a meme on TikTok, the video sharing app, which debuted in China 3 years ago and has exploded in popularity in the U.S. Thank you, Time Magazine, for explaining that to me. I mean that unironically.
Uh-huh.
I now understand TikTok more than I did. On the app, millions of video creators used the song as a soundtrack to transform themselves into cowboys and cowgirls, videos with the hashtag Yeehaw, almost all of which sample Old Town Road. It's been watched 67 million times. Okay, this is making more sense. So he makes this song, Old Town Road. Somebody puts it up on TikTok and uses it as the backdrop to their doing a Yeehaw challenge. And so it becomes popular by way of that. And then it's so popular, it gets on the actual country music charts. And then Billboard says, no, this isn't country music. So can you play a little bit of this?
I got the horses in the back, horse stock is attached. Head is matted black, got the boots black to match. Riding on a horse, ha, you can whip your Porsche. I've been in the valley, you ain't been up off that porch. Now, can't nobody tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing.
What do you think?
Tell me nothing.
I like it. I don't think it's country music.
That's pretty catchy, right?
I don't think I'm the arbiter of these things, but I understand. Yeah. Like, for me, I think, I could be totally wrong here, but those charts are, at least their origins are kind of tied to radio stations and radio station play, right? Like, if something is climbing up the charts, it has to do with sales, but it's also linked to, you know, where is this played? And I can't really hear this being played on my local country music station, even though, you know,
I guess, but I mean, as they pointed out on, I guess so, but as they pointed out on ATC, like, they played Jason Aldean, the country music singer, basically doing what has been called hick hop. Like, you know, like, country music guys now rap in their songs, you know, to some degree. They, you know, like, there's an argument that half of country music is basically rap, people just talking over music. It just feels like it's kind of a one-way street to me. Just to be specific about it here, Billboard pulled the song from the Hot Country Songs chart telling a representative for Columbia Records, which is where this guy is now signed, that its initial inclusion of the song was a mistake. The decision resulted in online backlash. Lil Nas X discussed with Rolling Stone the impetus for creating Old Town Road. He says, everything was stressful. I would probably get 3 hours of sleep staying up on the internet trying to promote my music at my sister's house before coming back home. I would be over there sleeping on the floor. I didn't want to come back home because I knew my parents would be mad at me. I had headaches literally almost every day, I guess, from depriving myself of sleep. And I was just being talked down because I left school. So, by the way, the deal was he quit college to try to make it in music, but he's living at his parents' house. He has debilitating headaches. And he says, Old Town Road came after a period of feeling like I was out of options. I was living with my sister. She was pretty much fed up with me being there. That's where the chorus line came from. It was me saying I want to leave everything behind. I guess it just feels to me like you just think it doesn't sound like a country music song. And you've already said you're not the arbiter of these things. But it just doesn't sound like a country music song to you. Therefore, it doesn't belong. You can see the point of why they wouldn't include it on the country music charts.
I mean, I think so. Listen, I like it, and I wish we did live in a world like if this were mixed up in a, you know, in some sort of a show where people are just spinning all kinds of music and it lives nicely next to some cool country songs, that'd be great. I would love that station. So, you know, I'm not trying to put my own whatever on this, but I guess I just sort of think I don't listen to the country music stations, but I sort of feel like they have a decent argument if this is not being played on country music stations and is outside of it. Like, to me, the music sounds very, very different than what a country music audience is looking for. And so
yeah.
And they would be put off by it. So that makes sense to me. These things are by nature subjective. But again, I would prefer it if this did have a place on country music stations.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the question, I guess a fair kind of way to look at this would be if Jason Aldean, I'm just going to go back to that example, if his song was released and ended up on the hip hop charts and you were like, yeah, but are they playing it on like Power 106 in LA? Mm-hmm. Like are they playing it on hip hop stations? No. And should they have to play Jason Aldean if it's not their style? Of course, my answer immediately would be no, of course not. I think I just have more empathy for the hip-hop artists of the world than the modern country music artists.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably just my pre-existing. I'm much more into Lil Nas X and the idea of him than I am into the idea of Jason Aldean. By the way, one other thing, can I just tell you from this? So speaking of, well, it's not a dank meme, but I retweeted this guy Lil Nas X over the weekend, which I'm sure was a big deal to him because the tweet had only had about 150,000 retweets, where I'll paraphrase here, but it's this picture of him in front of these like insane, like, you know, like a mid-century house and this really sick car and stuff. And he's like six months ago, I was living with my parents, suffering from debilitating headaches and didn't know what I was doing with my life. I'm still doing that. These are just some pictures of me photoshopped into Grand Theft Auto.
That's awesome.
It's like the greatest. I love this kid. Listen to this quote that I don't know if it's from Rolling Stone or Time magazine, but he's talking about how he ended up getting signed with Columbia Records, and he was I'll just read it directly from Time. Why did you decide to sign with Columbia Records? He goes, I wanted to stay independent because I figured there was no way I was going to be able to have control to create the type of music I want. I was basically ignoring a lot of labels. Presumably he was getting a bunch of attention when the song took off. He goes, I saw this guy's picture on Instagram and something told me to scroll back down. I didn't know who he was at the time, and I wanted to see his hair in the picture for some reason. Then I read the message and found out it was Ron Perry, the chairman of Columbia Records. I love that he mentioned that detail of wanting to see his hair for some reason, because I swear half of the pictures I look at online are because I'm like, what is that table in the background? Like,
right, yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's always the dumbest, weird, like, sometimes you just want clarification on something. You're like, wait, what are they doing? What are they wearing right now? Or, like, what kind of car is, like, there's always. I just love that was why he ended up going with Columbia Records, because he was curious about the guy's hair and then figured out it was this important, you know, record executive.
Yeah, I'm with you. That is exactly the definition of a dazzling detail.
Anyway, that's Old Town Road. To all the young people in the audience, sorry about that. And to all the people older and more out of touch than us, you're welcome. You now are cool like we are.
Mm-hmm. But we don't care. That's what makes us cool.
No, that's what makes us cool.
Yeah.
On your mark.
On your mark.
Get set.
Get set.
Now ready.
Ready.
Go.
Everybody rattle.
You know who's really cool? Our dazzling donors. They're the coolest. They make a dazzling donation each month, and it's extremely vital to this show. We don't have some viral song on TikTok. We're not getting the CEO of Columbia Records and his amazing hair reaching out to us. We're just out. We're really out here just doing this podcast and hoping that you, the tens of listeners, support it. And we want to thank some folks who've been doing that in a pretty meaningful way today. A couple of dazzling donors. Ty Burks of Bellevue, Washington. Ty says, hi, guys. I took a hiatus last year from being a dazzling donor, so y'all missed out on my thing, that thing being sending a rap song in for Luke's enjoyment. I sent Kato's Fruit Punch for y'all to play last go-around, and it was a hit, according to Luke. Oh, was it, Ty? Like, that song, Fruit Punch by Kato, I probably have listened to it over 1,000 times in my life. Like, it's... I had spent days where I would just put it on repeat. I love that song. So, here, Ty continues. If you wouldn't mind playing a bit of this jam, it would be greatly appreciated. It's These Days by Michael Christmas. We should go out with that song, Andrew, if that's cool with you. Side note, I sent Luke one of his songs a couple years ago, and he dug it. Trigger warning, the song's chorus has the word S-H-I-T in it repeatedly, but that's about it. Power out, bros. Well, thank you, Ty, and thanks for the recommendation. We'll play that at the end of the show. I have to give Ty credit. His hip-hop recommendations have been spot on. I don't know if we just have the same taste or what, but everything he's ever suggested for us, I have been a fan of.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I can't remember the Kato Breath song that you were talking about, but I'm sure if you played it for me, it'd ring a bell.
Let's see. I'm gonna do it now.
Are you
gonna
do it?
I'm going to. We're gonna do it. Let's see. I'm trying to find the song, but the problem is, okay, I got the original here. Let me just turn. Hold on. Easy. Let's. Here we go.
Yo. This is country.
This is smooth jazz.
There's a song that I wrote for you. Yeah. Ego in a perfect world, it's just me and you. Hey. But girl, let's just wait till this party through. Yeah. Cause I feel great, I don't know about you. I don't know about you, but I got this fruit punch in my cup.
Ringing any bells?
Yeah, and once we got to the hook there, that rings a bell.
Yes. So, anyway, now. This will be the music for our next dazzling donor. You're welcome, Steve Gehring of Burke, Virginia. Steve says, this is not a completely altruistic donation, since I would be seriously disoriented if TBTL were to end.
Oh.
So here's to many more years. Okay, enough about you guys. Everybody's a comedian.
No fast.
I added that, by the way. That was not in Steve's message. I need to read this verbatim because Steve is donating a lot of money to the show. Shout out to my wife, Telma, my son, Theo, and his girlfriend, Leah, who has been so good for Theo and is like the daughter we never had. I guess it's going to be a little awkward if they break up before you read this.
Oh.
When do people send these in? What are the chances?
Everybody's on their own schedule, so I don't know. We've probably had this one for quite some time. But, yeah, that I feel like everything that Steve starts to say is positive, and then he just like kind of he just punches you at the end.
I'm really stressed out for Theo and Leah. God, I hope those kids are okay. And then Steve says, "Okay, that's about 75 words. Did we tell people that's a 75 word limit?"
I don't remember exactly. We just asked people to be mindful of the length, I think.
Steve says, "Okay, that's about 75 words." So hey, Luke, congrats on your sobriety. I guess it's going to be a little awkward if you relapse before you read this. We're still doing okay there, my friend. Can't speak to Theo and Leah, but I can speak to that. I'm doing fine. But seriously, even if you did, relapse is part of recovery. As I write this, I'm 3 days shy of 17 months sober myself. Congrats, Steve. Yes. I also added that part. While I can't say I was completely surprised by your announcement, that would put you in the majority of the listeners, I think, Steve. I was very happy for you. From what I've heard on the show, it sounds like you're in a much better place, more accepting, more grateful, and more at peace. Oh, and Andrew, plug after these messages more. You and Genevieve are awesome. TBTL does ads for other podcasts. How about an occasional ad for ATM or throwing an ATM episode into the TBTL feed when you and Luke are both out and not able to do the show? Just a thought. Oops. Went over.
Yeah, we must have had more of a limit than I remember. I can't remember exactly how we asked people to restrain that. Well, he went over, though, so we have to cut something out of that message. What are we going to cut? Should we cut the after these messages thing?
I don't know. Maybe the part about Theo and Leah.
Yeah.
It's just out of an abundance of caution. I mean, you know, young people, they're mercurial. They these relationships, they start, they stop. It's funny because Carrie and I, when we went to Italy many years ago now, became obsessed with these two guys who we nicknamed Tio and Leo.
Really?
I know that I talked about these guys when I got back from the trip. It was Kamaro Kev's wedding in Croatia, and we went on a cruise ship. And cruised all around Europe, but we had a bunch of time before and after the boat trip in Venice, Italy. And Carrie and I went to the Venice Casino a few times, which is this amazing place. It is like so not like a kind of – just imagine the opposite of Goldie's, Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Goldie's has its charms as well. But what I liked about the Venice Casino was it's in this very old building. It's beautiful. And then they have this kind of cool restaurant where, like, you have to wear – actually, I think in just to be in the casino, too, you got to wear a jacket, like a suit jacket. And it just felt very like a James Bond movie.
It's exactly but anyway, what I was going to say. Very James Bondy.
We went there a couple times, and there's these two – brothers. They were like identical twins, except one was totally bald and one was totally wearing a bad toupee. So I guess they were both bald technically. So they were identical twins. They both looked like Jerry's Uncle Leo from Seinfeld.
Oh,
almost
okay.
Exactly like Jerry's uncle. So imagine two Uncle Leos, but then one of them has a toupee. And as I'm saying this, that must have been why we called him Tio, because, well, one, I think Tio means uncle in Spanish, which I know is not the language in Italy. I'm just saying. And also, I think it was T for toupee. So we had Leo and then Tio. And these two guys, we maybe went to the casino more than twice. I don't know. But every time we went there, Leo and Tio were there. And they were in one running argument for like days. And they lived – somehow we deduced, oh, we must have asked someone at the restaurant about them. And I think they lived in Murano, which is like this island that's near – Venice, and it's famous for its glass. They make a lot of, you know, really cool glass on Murano. Anyway, I guess these guys would come in from Murano like every day at this casino. They looked so miserable. They'd be walking around gambling. And then they would just be constantly bickering with each other. And we just like every time we'd go to this casino and we would see Tio and Leo, we would just love it so much for some reason. They were just total characters. This is a long-winded way of saying I hope that Theo and Leah have a happier and healthier relationship than Tio and Leo of the Venice Casino.
I vaguely remember you telling me that because I get very heavy, shut up, little man.
Shut up, little man. Nobody asked
my God,
you to say
dude.
Anything.
I get that vibe.
That's exactly the vibe. Except these guys, instead of being holed up in a San Francisco apartment, would apparently board some sort of boat and come over to Venice every day to like hang out in this casino and be apparently miserable.
Wow, what a life.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember, I can't remember which one, of like coming up and like standing at the like roulette wheel that I was playing at, and then like I swear to God, literally like putting some money down, and I don't think it was a huge amount of money, but putting money down and then literally like looking up into the heaven and praying audibly as the ball was going around. And like my theory on them was they probably had a bunch of money. They were just weirdos, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't. Like, it wasn't a kind of thing where – it wasn't like being at Goldie's at 11 on a Tuesday where it's some people that are dealing with extremely degenerative habits and addictions. These guys I just think were oddballs.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, all of which is to say, Steve and Ty, thank you so much for being dazzling donors. We really appreciate it. We could not do the show without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
I think this is going to be fun today, Andrew, because usually you're the quiz meister on this show, but I found a quiz today in the New York Times that I want to read to you, or I guess you could say subject you to. So you get to enjoy being quizzed. Now, the first question, the nature of the quiz is famous jokes, hoaxes, and pranks. It's actually submitted by Keith Williams. Keith Williams is a he won the 2003 Jeopardy Challenge College Championship and won $50,000 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in 2018. So he's like a Keith Williams is a noted knower of things, I guess you could say. And this is technically an op-ed, I guess. It's kind of interesting. Or actually, not really, but I'm going to talk about it anyway. The Times is committed to publishing a diversity of letters to the editor. We'd like to hear what you think about this or any of our articles. Here are some tips. Oh, I guess maybe it's not. When I saw that little note, I thought that this was technically... Yeah, it is. This is in the opinion section. I don't know why this is considered an opinion piece, Andrew, but I guess it is. Now, the question is quiz music. We've got our kind of traditional... But also, I was thinking, you know, because, like, it's April Fool's. Be too downbeat if we did Foolish Games by Jewel. That'd be a weird... Would this be a weird energy for the quiz?
No, this is an amazing version. Is this karaoke?
No, this is the real song, dude.
It is? You took your... I was thinking of a different song. I don't think I know this song.
Well, you've never taken your coat off and stood in the rain, my friend.
No, why would you do that?
Because you're playing a foolish game.
More serious. Come on. More rot.
Alright, question number one.
I'm kidding. Okay. Oh my goodness.
Back to,
oh, now this sounds awful. Oh God, that is like what? It's like, I don't know, like eating ice cream with one hand and biting lemons with the other. Ugh.
Actually, that would be a good combo. Lemon isn't a lot of ice cream. How about brushing your teeth and then biting into a lemon?
Or drinking orange juice. Yeah. Whew. Okay.
There you go. Okay. This is 10 questions, Andrew. When you get it right, you'll get this sound. When you get it wrong, you'll get this one because I'm full of pranks today.
So which is the – which is, get it right and I hear the buzzer?
I just hit the wrong button, but I tried to make it into a bit. This will be the indication you got it right. This will be the indication you got it wrong.
Right.
Okay?
Gotcha.
Question number one. The National Park Service received hundreds of calls from outraged Americans in 1996 after what fast food chain announced it had purchased a relic located in Philadelphia at Independence National Historical Park? Was it McDonald's? Was it Taco Bell? Or was it Arby's?
Can you just read the question again one more time? They freaked out.
There's 10 of these questions, okay? This is going to take a while. The National Park Service received hundreds of calls from outraged Americans in 1996 after what fast food chain announced it had purchased a relic located in Philadelphia's Independence National Historical Park?
I'm going to say McDonald's because I thought that maybe that restaurant had a connection to Philly, which is also probably wrong. I never watched that biopic. I don't know. Which one is it?
It is Taco Bell. They took out a full-page ad in several newspapers, including page A13 of the New York Times, to announce its acquisition, supposedly in effort to help decrease the national debt of the Liberty Bell, and they said it was going to be renamed the Taco Liberty Bell.
Oh, that makes sense. Sure, yeah.
Yeah, right. I didn't say this was funny, and I said it was just barely meeting the standard of being informative. We've got 9 more to go. At the 1984 Rose Bowl, students from what college hacked the scoreboard to show their school beating MIT by the score of 38-9? Was it Caltech? Was it Stanford? Or was it UCLA? The school that hacked the scoreboard at the Rose Bowl to show that they were beating MIT?
Stanford?
Gonna have to.
Hmm.
It was. There would be no way for you to know this. It was Caltech.
Okay.
And by the way, some dazzling deets on that. Apparently, the kids who hacked into the mainframe, they received job offers from the scoreboard company after this.
I thought you were going to say, like, just like from some sort of tech companies that like their Moxie, but literally the scoreboard company.
Yeah,
like
they were like
80s
okay.
movie.
Totally. And also, it was not Caltech's first Rose Bowl appearance. In 1961, apparently, a group of students from Caltech tricked fans of the opposing team into raising cards that spelled out Caltech. Those are both pretty good spoofs.
Yeah. God, how did they get them to raise the cards?
I don't know. Also, well, we don't have time. I was going to say, it couldn't have been the real Rose Bowl in 1984. What it was, I think, was they were playing in the Rose Bowl because Caltech and MIT are not, like, in 1984, it was probably the Huskies versus Michigan or something in the Rose Bowl. Like, because the stadium is also called the Rose Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe they must have been playing a game in the Rose Bowl because there's no way that Caltech won the Pac-8 in 1984 and I forgot about it.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out because I'm really bad with this stuff. I don't know. And I was trying to figure out, well, who would have been – so Stanford seemed like a pretty good contender.
That was a good guess.
And yeah.
Exactly. No, you made the more logical decision because – and sorry if that question was misleading about the Rose Bowl.
I got a lot on the line here, but you don't worry about it. You just go on with your little quiz. Let me just twist out here with your ill-worded questions from the New York Times.
New York Times! I just realized that, like, is this actually going to bother you? Because I don't want to make you feel frustrated
You seem way more concerned. Maybe that is just the burden of the quiz giver. I was very excited about this, but now I feel like you are kind of you're already too worried that it's not good hashtag content. And I feel like you're
I'm worried that it's going to make you feel insecure if you don't do well on the quiz.
No, okay, I don't expect to get. No, that's not why we play these games. That's not what I'm here for.
Well, people are supposed. These foolish games on April Fool's Day?
Do we have a song that we...
Like... This is actually the B-side of Foolish Games.
No, this is the A-side. Foolish Games was the B-side.
You would be shocked at, like, when we do... The reason I was being so, like, overly worried about if you were going to be feeling bummed is because, like, on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, when we have on these, like, very famous people... Some of them are legit worried about how they're going to do on the quiz. Same thing on Livewire. When we go like, oh, we're going to do a joke quiz with you, the handlers of people will be like, we need to get the quiz in advance because so-and-so does not want to look – it's like people are funny sometimes about that stuff. Like my thought is always like nobody cares. People are playing along at home and they just want it to be funny and interesting. They do not care if a person gets it right or wrong. And it does not – like if Salman Rushdie isn't getting – some questions right about some silly thing. Nobody thinks Salman Rushdie isn't a bright guy, you know?
Yes, and I understand that. I mean, I think that there might be some situations where a quiz might belie other ignorances. Like, I don't expect to know these, and I'm not expected to know these. Now, you know, I have a lot of insecurities about, like, how bad I am with geography. And, you know, you and I even, I think, talked about this a lot on the show and ended up... Didn't we train ourselves to name all of the United States by sight or something? Because we couldn't even do that. Does this ring a bell to you? Or was it just a project that I took?
I can't do it anymore if I had that ability at one time.
Right. See, and that's kind of the thing. And I feel like, oh, I should be able to know that. So it's when I get caught up in my complete ignorance of something I should know that does bother me. So I guess if you're a famous person, you hear quiz and you get a little... But again, I think handlers tend to be a little bit more on edge than the people they are handling at times. So anyway, I am.
Absolutely.
My handlers have signed off on this. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling confident. I'm excited for question number three.
All right, here we go. Good. You're 0 for 2 so far.
God
here
damn
we go.
It.
Question number three. In 1992, this one you'll get. This is relevant to our interests. In 1992, NPR's Talk of the Nation shared a supposed clip of what politician announcing he would run for president saying, quote, "I never did anything wrong and I won't do it again." Was it Spiro Agnew? Was it Joe Biden? Or was it Richard Milhouse Nixon?
Okay, so this was a spoof headline that NPR put out there, like we were talking about.
It was a supposed clip. It was an audio clip that it was 1992. Mm-hmm. It was an audio clip. It was on Talk of the Nation, and it was a politician announcing that they were going to run for president. And the politician was saying on the clip, "I never did anything wrong, and I won't do it again." Were they talking about Spiro Agnew, Joe Biden, or Richard Nixon?
It's got to be Spiro, because Biden, obviously, that wouldn't be a huge joke. Because, well, it could be, because he did. Was this around the time of his big plagiarism thing? But now we're just so that's so far in the past now. That's not even nearly a scandal at all. It doesn't even come up when they talk about him running. But yeah, at a time that was a big deal. It's definitely. I don't think it's Nixon, because even though that's the obvious joke, I think you'd run into some term issues there. I don't even think that would be a possibility. So it's Agnew or Biden. I'm going to say Agnew. God damn it. Was it Biden?
Richard Nixon.
Really?
They had the comedian Rich Little on.
Of course.
Who do you think was
did.
The host of Talk of the Nation in 92? That would have been Ray Suarez, right?
Ray Suarez was the only Talk of the Nation host that I recognize, because that's who was hosting when I started watching in the late 90s. I don't know how long he was doing
it. He is
though.
True hit king, Ray Suarez. And so in 1992, they had Rich Little on the show, which, again, I just love that Rich Little was still getting work in 92.
Yeah.
He pretended to be Richard Nixon. And that's the answer to that question.
Can I jump in here for a second? I'm not trying to be like sensitive about this. I told you not here for that. But
wait, let me get the sensitive music going.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to explain, everybody.
Yeah.
Just come here for sure. Gather in. I just want to explain my reasoning on that last question, and I feel like. If I'm a joke writer, like, obviously Nixon is the kind of obvious one there, because he's so well known, and the other two are more obscure. And I blame me losing that round because I expected more of the NPR audience, and I felt like maybe they wouldn't be going so broad. That seems like that might have been more of a Jay Leno kind of spoof, and not something that would be on Talk of the Nation. So I'll take the loss on that one. I'll take the buzzer, but I
take the L.
Mostly blame NPR's lack of faith in its own audience. Thank you.
I think it came down to which politician Rich Little could do his most competent impression of.
Also that.
You know what I mean?
Yes, like, of course. Rich Little, isn't that was his big thing, right? He has like 3 to 5 impressions, and like Dana Carvey, unfortunately, they both did the church lady, so that caused problems down the line.
Actually, Mo Rocca has a podcast called Mobituaries that's really good.
Go
back to our Mo Rocca music. And he, the first episode was about Von Meter. And it's a fascinating story, because Von Meter was uncannily able to impersonate John F. Kennedy. And Von Meter was arguably the most popular comedian in America. And then Kennedy is shot, and Von Meter has no career, and ends up with his professional life ended when John Kennedy's actual life ended. And it's kind of a crazy story.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And because that was his only impression, huh? Or at
yeah,
least
he
the
was
only
like
one
sort
that
of,
was sellable, I guess.
Yeah, he was kind of a middling stand-up, I think. But he just had this weird knack for doing Kennedy, and he used to sort of do it at the end of his act, and it was like everything else. Pretty soon, that was all that people wanted him to do. And then he put out this comedy record, and it was like the numbers that this comedy record sold were astronomical. Like became like an overnight sensation. In fact, Kennedy even commented on it kind of jokingly, like it was a thing. And I mean, presumably had Kennedy not died that day, Von Meter would have been able to continue doing that for many years and made a healthy living, and his whole life changed the day that Kennedy died.
This makes a lot of sense now. I hadn't heard of him, or I thought I hadn't, but I looked him up while you were talking, and I used to spend a lot of time going through like records at thrift stores or old used record stores. You just like, flip. You'd find all kinds of like, just excess records of certain eras that you just kept. They would just haunt you. You'd see them everywhere because they sold a glut of them, and then everybody got rid of them, and then nobody was buying them secondhand. And this record, The First Family, it was called. I've seen this thing in a million record stores, and I never really knew what it was. I knew it was, you know, some sort of comedy album based on the Kennedys, but it just, it's kind of funny that this is all clicking together now, because I must
have... Do you have it there?
I don't have it. I never bought it, but it's, I must have seen this thing and dismissed it, like, 400 times in my high school years.
Seeing if I can actually find...
Oh, of course. Somebody must have it online, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So let me... let's see here. I'm going to turn down my my quiz music, and I'm going to find... this is Von Meter. This is actually him on the Ed Sullivan Show, so this is not off of the album. And, of course, we're going to have to quickly wait through a YouTube ad, but I think we'll get there pretty quick. Okay, I'm skipping that, and let's see here. Here we go.
Now, you see, ladies and gentlemen, there is someone going around this country impersonating me.
By the way, he also looks like Kennedy. That's the kind of eerie part of it, too. He looks physically pretty similar to him.
I didn't mind around the New England area. I didn't mind around the Washington, D.C. area, but now it's gone just a little bit too far. It wouldn't be so bad if this were just another guy. This is not just another guy. This fellow is also an entertainer. He's doing my act. He's doing my gestures. And he's... using my lines. Do not ask what this country can do for you. That's one of my original lines.
So there you go. I mean, honestly, it sounds like someone doing a Kennedy impression to me, but I think it's because there have been so many...
better ones since?
Well, actually, this would be my guess. I think he probably actually sounds exactly like Kennedy really did, but now what we think of as how Kennedy sounded is like... the
Simpsons guy.
Like it's like a, something it's the Kennedy's accent has been Xeroxed 8,000 times. And so like I bet you he actually sounds like what Kennedy really sounded like, but that doesn't sound like what I think Kennedy sounded like, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but it's some corny shit though, we can agree to that.
I mean at the time it was a real sensation. So yeah. Okay. Where are we at on this quiz?
I am 0-3, I believe.
You're crushing it. I was gonna say you were 0-3. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
I just want you to know I'm not enjoying that you're doing pretty bad on this quiz. It's, if it sounds like I'm relishing that, I'm not. It's just.
I mean, it just feels like you really set me up here in a way that like I just don't appreciate, and in my head about this
name,
right now.
Question 4 of 10. What name was given to the 1943? I want you to know, by the way, Andrew, that I got like 5 out of 10 when I did this quiz earlier. So you still have time to come back and beat my record.
Stress to you how much I don't care. I mean, I'm enjoying the quiz, but I really
are you laughing
am
or
not.
Crying right now. I'm having a hard time hearing you down the line. All right. Okay. What was the name that was given to the 1943 ploy to fool the Nazis into believing that Allied forces were planning an invasion of Greece? So in 1943, there was a plot to try to trick the Nazis into thinking that the Allies were actually planning an invasion of Greece. Presumably, then the Nazis would marshal their forces in the wrong place, and then they'd be caught unaware. So was it called? Was this plan to trickerate the Nazis? Was it called Operation Avalanche? Operation Mincemeat or Operation Zombie?
Okay. Obviously, it is Operation Mincemeat.
Oh, my God, Andrew. When it comes to meat-related questions, you really crush it. That's exactly right, my friend. In April 1943, the body of a British major whose briefcase contained top-secret plans for the supposed invasion was found off the coast of Spain. The Germans learned of it and fell for the fake plans, which eased the Allies' landing in Sicily. So the Germans bought it. They thought they found the body of a British major with a briefcase with these top secret plans in it. In reality, Andrew, the body was from a homeless person who had ended up in a London morgue.
Oh, my God. Got dark at the end there. Do you want to know how I got that right?
Yes.
I just said it with confidence. I had no idea, but I just went into round four saying, whatever you say here, don't hem, don't haw, say it like you know it, and it worked.
Look at you. I think that that's actually, in a weird way,
a positive ending to that story. Like, I know what you mean, it got dark, but like they had to get the body from somewhere, and I liked that it was like from a morgue. I liked that they would you be surprised to hear, Andrew, that I liked that they didn't kill someone for the bit? Wouldn't that come as a surprise to you?
It was a different time.
I liked that they didn't kill anyone for the bit, and I kind of feel like if I passed away and then there was a way to use my body to trick the Nazis, that would give my life some friggin' purpose, or like my afterlife some purpose.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of looking at it. I'm with you.
You are now 1-4. I should say, I'm sorry, one.
One, and
one
four.
For four, or one for four. Okay, here we go.
Oh yeah,
Rihanna,
1-4. Yeah, 1-3. Okay.
Rihanna, Britney Spears, and Miley Cyrus have all given late night performances in what late night host's bedroom, gaining entry with the assistance of the comedian's wife. So check this out. I don't even think this is necessarily a bit on one of these shows. There is the wife of a late night host who thinks it's funny to basically, like, in the middle of the night, let these famous stars into their bedroom to start singing to her husband.
Wow.
Yeah.
Feels like a James Corden-y thing, but I haven't even heard the
James Corden is on the list.
Okay.
So is Jimmy Fallon. So is Jimmy Kimmel. The one rule of this question is your name has to be some variant of James.
I'm going to go with Kimmel on this.
Oh man, Andrew, you Kimmeled with confidence.
Because he's so pranky, and I feel like I've read a lot of like about their I feel like I've read a lot about their jokey relationships, and he seems to be kind of open about his home life and how much fun they have spoofing each other. That just seemed right to me.
There you go. I'd never noticed this until I looked at these, but every late night host is named Jim.
Yeah.
I guess not Steven, but like James Corden, Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel. After, I guess, Dua Lipa, who's a performer I'm not familiar with, but that was another performer who performed in Jimmy Kimmel's bedroom. He told the media, for whatever reason, my wife thinks it's funny to have a famous singer and a bunch of dancers sneak into our house in the middle of the night to wake me up with an impromptu performance. I like that, actually.
Yeah, me too.
Jimmy Kimmel's wife is named Molly, and I forget her last name, but she was a writer. I believe she might have been the head writer on Late Night, or on the Jimmy Kimmel Show, rather. And that's, I believe, how they met.
I see.
And I think it's like Molly McAleer or something. So there's a history of, you know, them being funny and being kind of like, you know, spoofing each other, pranking each other.
Yeah.
Here we go. Question number six. A fake news story in 1998 created a stir when it announced that what state legislature had voted to legally change the value of pi to 3.0. with the bill's sponsor pointing to the Bible as proof. So in 1998, there was a fake news story about a state that was voting to legally change the value of pi, which is, you know, 3.14159, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Round it down to 3.0, and they were citing the Bible as reason for doing this. Was it
Alabama on the list?
No, I love confident Andrew.
I just want to get ahead of it.
It is Alabama. It is on the list.
Oh, and that's
strong
the answer.
Branding.
All right.
The answer is Alabama.
There you go.
You didn't even need to hear the other possible states, which were Indiana and Utah. The supposed legislation was not totally without precedent. Apparently, in 1897, Indiana had actually tried to pass a bill fixing pi at various incorrect values, including 3.2.
And that was in the 1890s, did you say?
In the 1890s, almost 1900, 1897, Indiana was trying to round pi up to 3.2. I guess I don't understand enough about math to know what the implications would be of that, like why it would matter. I know that what pi is an irrational number, right? Like it's, I think you can, there's no end to it, correct? You can keep calculating it out forever, and maybe that just made somebody their brains break in Indiana, and they just were like, call it 3.2. But
right.
I don't know if that would that mess up, like, you know, the moon landing? If, like, do we need pi for stuff like that? I'm really out of my element here, Donnie.
you and I survived Y2K, so I don't believe anything they tell. I think everything would be fine. If they can call Pi 5 if they want to.
You know who almost didn't survive Y2K, and it's been discussed on the show? Producer emeritus Jen Flash Andrews, who literally moved to Eastern Washington with her husband to a community that was mostly solar and like water powered, because that's how convinced that she had been at one point. Although I believe, if I remember her take, and the listeners probably remember it more more accurately than I do, but it was like, I think it started as a Y2K thing and then became just, well, it would be good community to just live. But the other people, there were other people from my high school that ended up moving out there, and some of them never came back. It's like the greater Colville area. I believe it was in a town called Rice, Washington.
And did they stay out there for a while, Jen and Jason?
For a while, but then I think they were ready to come back to civilization after I don't know, a couple of years. I remember I was hosting a show on New Year's Eve on KVI, like fill-in hosting, on the night, you know, of Y2K. And I had done no preparation because, of course, I didn't. And I didn't think it was going to be a thing, but I remember in the back of my mind being like, well, you never know. And then when I saw that it was had turned over to 2000 in, like, I guess, you know, New Zealand or something, and New Zealand still seemed to be there. Like, you know, watching on CNN, it'd show you, like, fireworks going off. And I was like, well, they're still there, so I guess that's okay. And I did feel actually pretty relieved to learn it wasn't going to be a thing because, you know, I don't know. It seemed, depending on who I was listening to, it seemed very plausible that it was going to just – all hell was going to break loose.
Yeah, I – Y2K kind of got me because I remember – I don't want to go into detail, but I had a pretty lousy – New Year's Eve experience that New Year's, I believe. And I ended up being out basically all night. And I remember a bunch of us were walking back I was living in my, not a dorm at that point. I was living in my little studio apartment. And it was, I remember the sun was already coming up. And then we had talked about Y2K so much to the buildup of New Year's Eve, but then I went out and I had this night, and now it's like 6 a.m. and everything was fine. The airplanes were in the sky. Everything was working. And then like, I kind of forgot that Y2K could be a problem. I came home and I fired up my computer, which was not on the internet. It was just a computer that, you know, I did a lot of writing back then, a lot of terrible, terrible writing. And, you know, I think I came home just to like fire up my computer and, you know, maybe write about my New Year's Eve experience in a diary type of thing or something. And, my computer was toast because it was an old 486 that was like at least 10
years
old.
Wait, you got Y2K. Your computer was one of the computers?
Yeah, because it was, but I mean, it was, you know, it was like literally a 486 that wasn't even hooked up to the internet. It was basically a word processor, you know, it was like nothing. And I think basically, the internal clock just didn't know what to do, and I think I went into – I just have this weird memory of just having this kind of bad New Year's Eve and then still not going to bed and bleary-eyed going into the BIOS on my computer and being like, I can't believe this is actually happening. I can't believe this shit is real. And I think I might have fixed it. I don't recall.
Oh, my God. I mean, I know that was annoying for you, but I like am excited that I know one person who got kind of boned by Y2K.
I got Y2K'd.
Nice.
So I got like two right now, right? Do I got two right?
No, I think you got three right.
Okay, so we've gone through.
Well, let's see. Let's go back. You got Operation Mincemeat.
Okay.
You got Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
And you didn't even need to hear all of the options on Alabama. You're on a hot streak, my friend.
The Alabama one, I was just thinking, I had a feeling they're going to throw Utah in there too, but I was like, they're not going to be making decisions based on the Bible, like the Judeo-Christian Bible, as much as like a state in the, like
the Book of Mormon.
The American South, would be. So
their jam, yeah.
So that's why I threw that out there. Okay.
It was very smart. It was a very educated guess.
So 3-3 now, is that what I got? Or
3-3, my friend. We are on question 7 of 10.
Okay.
In 1969, Rolling Stone magazine announced that some musicians, including Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger, John Lennon, and Paul McCartney, had formed a supergroup named what? Now, this was a made-up story. This didn't really happen.
Year?
But they announced it in Rolling Stone, I guess maybe as an April Fool's. What was the name of this supposed supergroup? Was the band called Bigger Than Jesus, The Main Street Exiles or The Masked Marauders?
What year is this?
1969.
Exile on Main Street's already out.
Wow.
Look at you. The Bigger Than Jesus, I just don't think that's believable enough for the joke. The Masked Marauders, I don't get. I'm going to go with the, what was the Exiled Main Street one? The Exiled Main Streeters?
Main Street Exiles.
Yeah, no. I can hear in your voice
logic.
I got it wrong.
Well, you know what I like? First of all, it's really interesting to hear you kind of, you know, deduce this. Because I could never tell you when Exile on Main Street came out. And you're right, Bigger Than Jesus is kind of like... Like, that would be too obvious of a name. Because John Lennon said the Beatles were bigger than Jesus, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm just going to tell you, I got this one wrong.
No, you know what? You know what? This, I'm really bummed out because I just looked it up. Exile Main Street did not come out until 1972.
Hmm. Okay, well, so you know that's probably eliminated,
but wait, this,
right?
This spoof was supposedly in Rolling Stone in 1969?
1969, Rolling Stone magazine announced that Bob Dylan, Mick Jagger, John Lennon, and Paul McCartney had formed a supergroup, and the Rolling Stone named this made-up supergroup.
How could they?
And
have...
they named it either Bigger Than Jesus, The Main Street Exiles, or The Masked Marauders.
So clearly, though, that's supposed to be a joke on the Exile on Main Street, a famous record by the Rolling Stones that doesn't come out for another 3 years. How is Rolling Stone?
Well, that could be not a thing they really did. It could be a made-up answer by the person
who
wrote the quiz.
I see. I'm sorry. I thought the spoof was written in Rolling Stone in 1969. That's why I was getting confused. Okay.
Well, it was. But what I'm saying is, these are three possible names that they gave the supergroup. But two of them they didn't. Two of them were written by Keith Williams when he put
in,
the
in
quiz
1969,
together.
3 years before there's an album called Exile on Main Street?
Just eliminate it from the possibilities, because obviously Rolling Stone didn't do that. They couldn't have known about it. But Keith Williams, who wrote this quiz like a year ago, could have gone back and... Do you follow? The point is...
Yes.
The point is the timing. You're right. The timing does not line up because Rolling Stone did not 3 years before that album call the supergroup this.
Yes.
Keith Williams, who wrote the quiz, was making it up as a thing.
Sorry. Yeah, my brain broke for a second.
That was complicated, though, and I'm not just patronizing you. That's a weird thing to wrap one's mind around.
Of course,
that not sarcastically. Okay. Meaning the answer is, obviously, the Main Street Exiles. No. What is the... Is it... Was the band
Marauders?
Called... Did Rolling Stone call them Bigger Than Jesus, the Main Street Exiles, or the Masked Marauders? This pretend supergroup that did not ever...
It must have been the Marauders then, right?
My friend, when you're right, you are right.
My friend, when you're wrong, you are right.
The joke was the idea of Greil Marcus, the music journalist who was fed up with the supergroup trend. But the positive response to this made-up news was so overwhelming that Greil Marcus hired musicians to record an album under the fake group's name, The Masked Marauders. For the record, that's a terrible name for that supergroup.
It's really bad.
There's
disappointed in everybody
history,
involved.
Like, none of those... Masked Marauders sounds like a totally different genre of music. Like, none of these... There is no universe in which I can imagine any of those artists saying, you know what we want the band... You know what we want the band to be called? The Masked Marauders.
Wow. Was that a composite of all of their voices at once? Because that was amazing.
It
that's
was,
never even
including
been attempted
Greil
before.
Marcus.
Yeah, that's cool. Wow.
Yeah.
First time in history. Watch out, Rich yikes. Little.
But you got it right. Watch out, Von Meter. All right. Hey, you got it right, though, my friend.
We're not. We're not, because you already said you had already. No. I just deduced after you had. We had figured out the other two were wrong.
Come
on, you can't give me that.
Have you ever heard anyone get a question on? Wait, don't tell me. It's like you figured it out.
I don't want an asterisk next to my name in the Quiz Hall of Fame.
All right, fair, fine. Then officially, okay. You get that.
All right.
Okay. Question 8 out of 10. I believe you are now 3 right and 4 wrong.
Yep.
And 3 out of 7.
Okay.
With a name meaning rubbish or weakling in local parlance, Kakareko topped the field of more than 500 candidates in the 1959 city council. I'm going to unpack this when I read it because it's complicated. In the 1959 city council elections in Sao Paulo, Brazil, she was disqualified, however, on account of being what kind of animal? So somebody in 1959 in Sao Paulo put up an animal in a city council election, and they nicknamed the animal basically the local equivalent of like weakling. And this candidate was disqualified for being what kind of animal? Was it a gorilla, a pig, or a rhino?
I think it's a pig, Luke.
Let's see here. Ooh. It was a rhinoceros.
Really?
In that... It was technically a Republican, but it did not vote
conservative enough. If you didn't make that joke, I was going to.
It really was a rhinoceros. The rhino, even though she died a few years after her victory, the rhino lives on in the phrase "vote cacareco," which means protest vote. And I'm sorry, huge apologies for my pronunciation. I'm very bad with Portuguese. It's probably cacarecho or something. There's a lot of shush. In Portuguese that I am so bad with. Anyway, apparently saying that, like, vote, whatever, however you say that name, to this day is a way of just saying, like, a protest vote in Brazil, which is kind of funny.
Yeah. Well, how do you say Burger King in Portuguese? Do we know? we'll look it up. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Here's how you pronounce it. Next question. Question 9 out of 10. Wearing a prosthetic nose and chin, what hitmaker dressed up as a nanny named Jenny in 2015 to impersonate herself in an audition? Was it Adele? Was it Janelle Monáe? Or was it, I just wanted to say Janelle Monáe's name, like it rhymed with Adele.
Sure.
Was it Dalel Parton? Also known as Dolly Parton.
So just a quick reminder of what, so she went in and did an audition, but dressed up like a maid? Am I understanding this correctly?
No, I'm going to tell, we actually, I believe, talked about this at the time, or it definitely was, it was making the rounds. This, the singer, the correct answer here, this singer was basically holding auditions for a singer to impersonate her. So it was like a call went out, hey, can you impersonate this singer?
Yeah.
And people showed up for the audition, and then this singer showed up for the audition herself in disguise and then revealed herself to in fact, I don't think that she even necessarily orchestrated the audition. I believe that maybe the audition was happening anyway. She showed up to audition to impersonate her own self.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
when she starts singing with her iconic voice, everyone's like, WTF. And people in the waiting room, I believe, were crying when they met her.
Yes. I feel like this was Adele. I feel like I remember this story, and I feel like it was Adele. But wait a second.
You are right,
on.
My friend.
Was Exile on Main Street out at this point or not?
When was 9/11?
Because that doesn't
Let's just work it backwards.
Wow.
Okay, good. We have some more context. The prank was part of a BBC special pegged to the release of Adele's third album. The impersonators thought they were auditioning to play her in a television pilot. So it was... you know, set up for Adele to do this reveal.
Mm-hmm.
It was not just like a random audition, but it was very effective, if I remember right. It was actually quite affecting, I guess you could say, to these women who were auditioning when they met the real Adele. Their level of excitement was pretty cool. If I remember,
I remember that. Adele, you just like Adele, right? Like Adele's just the best.
Yes, I do. She just seems, and every, like, I don't know, where when she was kind of having maybe her peak moment, I remember she did a big, like, 60 Minutes interview, or might have even been on Sunday morning, and she just was so likable and extremely down to earth for someone whose life was extremely weird because of her fame and fortune. All right, here we go. Question number 10. You got that one right, bringing you to...
I think if I get this one right, I could split it. I think.
Okay. Let's see. I've got these here. So you are just, if you're scoring at home, you got the first one wrong because you said McDonald's. You got the second one wrong because you said Stanford, although I think that was a really smart guess. You got the third one wrong because you said Spiro Agnew. Mm-hmm. But then things really started to turn around. Mm-hmm. You got Operation Mincemeat right, Jimmy Kimmel right, mm-hmm. Alabama right, which is a little hurtful to our Alabama listeners. Peace and love. You got the Masked Marauders wrong, even though I was willing to give you the point, but you won't take mm-hmm. my charity. Mm-hmm. And you also got the rhinoceros in wrong. Sao Paulo, yeah. Brazil, wrong. But then you got Adele right. So what does that bring us to?
So that's 5 wrong, 4 right. So I can, even it up with this last one. It is a lot of pressure.
Okay. Hold on. I got special music for this.
You know what we should do is, why don't you just give me the last question tomorrow? We'll hold it over. No, just joking.
That's a great, let's see here. Oh, man. Good. Here we go. Now we're getting the serious quiz music going.
Okay. Is this Jewel?
This is the Masked Marauders. Question number 10. This is to tie the game. This is to preserve the Walsh family name and to preserve some level of dignity for you and your family. I think you say, I got 5 out of 5. I got, I was half right, half wrong. That's legit. I was got 4 right and 6 wrong. Ugh,
yeah, no. When I go to the family reunion, I want to be able to look my cousins in the eye. So let's get this going.
What do you think they think you do? Do you think they understand what your job is?
I think to a degree. I'll never forget my genuinely. Aunt Louise saying, "I listened to your blog." It was my favorite thing anybody's ever said to me.
I'm sure that I said this same thing the last time this conversation came up, but I definitely got family members in Philly who asked me, am I still DJing?
Right.
And honestly, the answer is yes, because here I am playing spinning music news. And talking over it.
Yeah, right. You're real Jason Bentley.
Who's? Oh, yeah. Nice. I consider myself more of a Garth Trinidad. Thank you. All right. When former NASA engineer Mark Rober created a glitter bomb to punish porch thieves in 2018, his fake package bore a return address of what fictional movie character whom Mr. Rober called a childhood hero? So I don't know if you remember this story, but this NASA engineer built this extremely elaborate glitter bomb package because people had been stealing his Amazon deliveries off his porch. And he wrote a fake return address on it, and it was to what fictional movie character? Was it Gordon Gekko? Oh, by the way, I forgot to mention that this song had a break in it. Let's go back and listen to that break. DJ Luke.
This goes back to the old days, right? This used to use this on the radio show, I think. Oh my God.
What bullshit. Okay, sorry. What childhood hero was it? Was it Gordon Gekko? Was it Dudley Booger Dawson? Or was it Kevin McAllister?
The first one again.
Gordon Gekko.
Gekko. Yeah, when you first said it, that felt really right. Yeah, that felt really right when you said that. The last one is the Home Alone kid, Kevin McAllister.
Yes.
I don't know who Booger is.
Childhood hero. Booger is from Revenge of the Nerds.
Oh, right.
Booger is quite adept at burping. And then he's also... Now I just have to restart it. This is actually not the part where... This is just that the theme's over. The Booger is... He's that guy. He can really burp. But then he's also in... Better Off Dead. He's the can you imagine the street value of this mountain?
Oh, right. Yes.
Remember that guy?
I do. I'm trying to think. I know that, and I know that you loved that joke as a kid. I actually associate that joke with you for some reason. You must have brought it up before on the show at some point when we were listening
this guy.
To
go that way really fast. If something gets in your way, turn.
That was him giving John Cusack advice.
Genevieve saw him in the coffee shop next to the Browns Bar in L.A. once, just so you know.
Wow.
Yeah, okay.
And by the way, he shows up occasionally on... sorry. He shows up on the show Supernatural that my buddy Misha is on.
Okay, right.
Boogers on that show.
Okay, yeah.
And apparently, all around, great guy.
Good.
So, was it childhood hero, Dudley Booger Dawson, a Gordon Gekko, or Kevin McAllister?
And it is described as his childhood hero. It seems weird that Gordon Gekko...
Well, that's where it gets complicated. Mr. Rober called a, quote, childhood hero. But, well, I don't want to put my thumb
but you
on the
are.
Scale.
But you are. Because two of them make sense as childhood heroes. A goofy guy who's in, like, silly 80s movies, and a kid who, you know, Home Alone, it was a kid's movie. And I think what you're indicating with the hesitation in your voice is that it's weird that this would be a childhood hero. And that would make me think that you are pushing me to say Gordon Gekko. And I
everything about your logic was great right up until the name that you said.
Okay.
It's sort of like this. It's sort of like this fascinating theme. Everything is great until about a minute 53 into it. <There's>,
So we know you've told me that it's not Gordon Gekko. You've straight up told me now it's not Gordon Gekko. So
Gordon Gekko is the masked marauders of this question.
Wait, hold on. But that was the right answer last time.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
Okay. All right.
Gordon Gekko is the Main Street Exiles of this question.
Okay. And the question was written in 72, you say. okay. Then I guess we're going to go with Booger. You've done everything you can to give this to me, so if I got it wrong, then I just can't look at my cousins. Like, that's it. Nice.
I'm now just in this quiz for that break in the millionaire theme.
I went with Booger.
Final answer?
Final answer. Yeah, whatever. Damn it. God damn it. Why were you saying it's weird that he'd have his childhood hero then? Because McAllister, that totally makes sense.
Oh, yeah, you know what? You're right. I really led you astray. Can I tell you, Mike, can you get a do-over? Okay, pretend that you don't know the answer.
Booger
Dawson? That was not fair, Andrew. I really screwed you up on that one. Can I explain what was going through my mind, how I thought I was helping you?
Yeah, yeah.
When I saw former NASA engineer Mark Rober, in my mind, I made him a former NASA astronaut.
That's just how
more
it
on
ends.
This tomorrow. No.
It doesn't even fade out.
That's how the music ends? Yeah, of course.
It doesn't even fade out.
No, it's just lit. And like we have, it shows in iTunes how many times I've played it. I've played that 842 times.
I mean, half of those
over
were
the course
this
of the show.
Quiz.
This has been played 842 times.
I believe that.
And it's this bad.
All right.
Okay, this is so unfair to you. I really screwed you up on this, and I apologize. I, in my mind, was like, there's no way a NASA astronaut is young enough that Kevin McAllister could be a childhood hero of theirs.
Hmm.
That was what was going on in my mind. But a NASA engineer could be that age.
Mm-hmm.
I was honestly thinking, well, how long does it take to become an astronaut? You've got to, first of all, probably be, in like the Air Force. Usually they've flown something else. They've had military service. Mm-hmm. They're usually doctors. They're very scientific minds. Like, there's all this stuff, and I thought, there's no way this is a guy who's the age where, like, he was digging on Kevin McAllister as a kid. He has to be older than that. But, of course, he could be a NASA engineer, and Kevin McAllister could be a childhood hero of his, and that makes the most sense because it's a very Home Alone-y prank.
It is, yeah.
Movies are pranking.
Yeah.
So, I was miscategorizing Mark Rober. In my mind, I feel like I really led you astray, and I apologize, Andrew. This one's on me.
Well, that's okay. I mean, I'll take the loss, but I think what we learned is you also lost. That doesn't make me feel any better, by the way. I don't take comfort in that.
It should make you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, I guess. It's not so lonely on this loser island.
That's my bad. I apologize. I'm sorry.
No, not at all. I actually enjoyed that quiz. I like quizzes. Now, it is... I was going to say, usually... I'm much more comfortable being on the asking side. I don't know if that's true. I enjoy that. I like just sitting back, letting them come at me.
That was fun. I wish that Keith Williams would put more quizzes in the New York Times that we can rip off wholesale.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man. It's not from a female.
Tomorrow I have a 15-question quiz on Jewel.
Oh, man, that would be great. By the way, where's my Reader's Digest? How many times do I say that a day? I saw that there was something on the cover of Reader's Digest this week that I haven't looked at it yet, but I was like, ooh, that could be hashtag content. Although that last, oh, man, we got so many emails and V-mails from people who are like who work in the medical community who were pretty upset about some of the misinformation they believe and probably rightfully believe that that Reader's Digest kind of quizzy thing was putting
really?
Out there. Because they were trying so – Reader's Digest was trying so hard to blow our minds that they were really kind of stretching the definitions of things. Like I know we got a voicemail from one person who really took umbrage about the I guess the stated fact that you can hydrate by drinking coffee. Because she's like, I have patients who are dealing with things. Like I don't know if it was diabetes or something like that. And she's saying like, they can't drink coffee to hydrate. Trust me on this one. So anyway, we'll see if we can spread some more Reader's Digest misinformation soon. I have a great story here that somebody posted to our Slack channel, which, by the way, you can join the fun at Slack. If you go to tbtl.net, there's a little link to be invited into the community there. And this is about showing up at school when there's no school that day. And you had been talking about that, Luke. I want to share that. But before we do, I love this this kind of brain teaser of a question that Keaton sent us saying, I'm not sure exactly where this came from, but I was thinking about the networks of friends we all have and how parts of those networks are always hidden to certain people depending on their place in the network. All right, here's an example. One of my coworkers might know one of my friends, but I might not have no idea that they're even aware of each other. I'm sure that this phenomenon has some sociological jargon associated with it, but I don't know what it is. But I'm very curious if it's possible that for one person somewhere in the universe to both know Luke and Andrew, but not know that we know each other.
Whoa.
Does that make sense? Is there somebody out there who knows you individually, has a personal relationship of some sort with you, also has some sort of a relationship with me, but does not know that we work together and do this bullshit every day? Is that possible?
Yeah. Vanessa.
Oh, yeah. Math works out on that. This is blowing my mind.
Okay, that's a great question. Would we know that the person knows us but doesn't know that we know each other?
We have to list everybody. Let's just do it now. How much? You don't have a hard out today, do you? We have some time here.
No. Will you stop naming friends?
Okay. Durs.
Oh, my God. That's weird.
Because
anybody at the radio station.
Phyllis.
Anybody at the radio station knows both of us. By the way, if Phyllis Fletcher ever becomes a rapper, I want her rap name to be Philosophical.
Oh, God.
It's a strong
Phyllis, rapper. I know you're listening. That's a good name.
Like, first name Phyllis, last name Offical.
Yeah. Is that also the first line of her first song that you just threw out there?
Yes.
Now you just have to figure out something.
The album would be called Philosophical. The track would be Philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like one of those bands where they just all... It's all about that. I mean, that's it for the band. That's all I've got. For her. So, Phyllis, you have to take it from here yourself. But that's, I think, a pretty good start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh. If it's anybody from... I mean, if it's anybody from any of the radio stations we've worked at, obviously they would know both of us, and they would know we know each other probably, right? I mean,
there's
how about
a chance
this?
That you work with somebody maybe at CBS who's like been some sort of a producer on some show of yours, and especially because that's more East Coast based, and it's somebody who was an intern on one of the shows I worked at New Hampshire, or, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who kind of came and went over my 10 years at New Hampshire Public Radio, and a lot of those people end up in other East Coast media jobs.
You know what? I bet you it's much more likely it's somebody in LA.
Oh, yeah.
Like somebody
you're
at,
right,
somebody
yeah.
in the LA public radio scene that you know, that I know, and they just don't know that we know each other.
Yeah.
You know who it is? Jason Bentley.
Do you know Elvis Mitchell? Elvis Mitchell doesn't remember me, so that's a, maybe that's a bad example.
I've never met Elvis Mitchell.
Okay.
Meet Elvis Mitchell.
I know. I hear he's the bad boy of public radio. The reigning bad boy of public radio.
I'm coming for you, Elvis. Watch your back. Who else? Who's like a big... I'm trying to think of somebody who's like a big fish there who... Like... Does Madeline know we know each other?
Yes. I think she hired me because she thought I was like you. She was very disappointed. Do you know Evan Kleinman, the host of Good Food? She would probably remember
me. I don't.
Me.
I know of. Okay. I know of her.
All right.
How about... Oh, you know who? I figured it out. How about John Raby of Off Ramp?
Oh, God.
Did you ever meet him?
I met him once in... passing, but I was also when I met him, though, I was like dialing up the ISDN to talk to you for TBTL. That's why I was at KPCC.
You were displacing John Raby recording his award-winning show Off Ramp,
yes,
so that you could do TBTL. So that, therefore, did you get into a conversation about who was on the other line?
My guess is our friend Colin probably introduced me to him and explained why I was there. So I think that we got to take Raby off. Also, Raby doesn't know me. Like, Raby does not.
Well, that's good. Okay,
I don't
exist
in his brain anymore, I don't think.
Well, I don't exist in his brain either, but I just have met him before. So define knowing us, because that's a whole other element to this.
I think it's somebody who like knows we exist. I think it's somebody that we are at this point maintaining some sort of relationship with. Or at least if I sent them a note, they would know
who
I was.
How about Christian Bordahl?
He would know because I worked very closely with him at KCRW, and so he would know that I was always dialing up you after the show.
Why are you trying to be so close to Christian?
Well, I just, you know.
You would have just kept it more professional and not talked about TBTL. We could be done with this because it would definitely be
I know. I love that we are. Now we're doing it. I didn't think we were actually going to do it. And now but it's late in the show. If the listeners don't like this.
What about Martha Little?
Don't know. Oh, wait. Was she a producer for Madeline?
She produces that international show that Madeline does.
Yeah, I don't think I think I met her at a party at Vanessa's once. And I think it was right after I quit. If she remembers me at all, she would know that I do this for a living. Because the time, if I'm thinking of the right person, when I met her, I had just quit to do this job.
Did you start every conversation talking, bragging about TBTL?
No, you.
Why are you ruining this for
you specifically? Just like one of my first things is like, "Hi, I'm Andrew Walsh. I know Luke Burbank," and then the conversation just flows from there.
This is why you're having a hard time in social situations. People don't know what to do with that information.
I just say, "Ask me about Luke Burbank." I have a little
ask
button.
Ask me about my Luke Burbank.
Ask me about my Luke Burbank.
Is that a show title?
Maybe. Certainly. But I bet you you're right. You know what, though? I think that, like there was somebody who – there was somebody – to take it back to my East Coast thing. There was somebody who I knew really well that I worked closely with and was a good friend of mine at New Hampshire Public Radio. And then she went on to work for Al Jazeera for a while, like, you know, here in the States. And then found herself – and, you know, I had – hadn't stayed in touch with her, and then she found herself at WAMU, and I knew she was there.
Okay.
And it wasn't until years later that we now have, like, you know, like Taylor Burney, listener of this show, who we now know. And it turns out, like, they had been fast friends for a long time. And, like, Amy Walensky was part of that WAMU crew. And there was a moment where we all realized, oh my God, like, we didn't realize we all knew each other. If that makes sense. It was exactly the situation that this listener is bringing up. Now, that's not involving you, but I still feel like because of all the people I met at that stage in my career, I still think it might... I feel like L.A., my experience in L.A. was more tied to TBTL. Everybody knew I did TBTL there. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. Here's what we're going to have to do. When we go to the PRPD in St. Paul this summer,
yes,
we'll find someone and we'll bring them on the show because there will be somebody there who we both know. That. So, but we're just going to have to put a pin in this.
Oh, my God. I love this.
Or
Let's
we're
like
going to have to
do
just keep doing this every day until this summer. I'm also willing to do that.
At the end of every show, we do a segment where we just
We take out our address books and we just name 10 people each.
I can get out my day timer and go through it.
I love this. Also, I like the idea of you and I somehow really ostentatiously being like together at PRPD, like walking around and just seeing if anybody looks at us and is like, I didn't know you two knew each other. Like, we can't leave each other's side.
I'm into that.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably how it's going to go anyway.
Yeah. We'll pull a third coast where we'll just hide out in your hotel room for pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, do you want me – here, I'm going to read to you this one last email, and then we'll wrap it up. And I really did like this. This is actually not an email. This was posted by Margaret on Slack. She says, Luke's story of being dropped off at school on a non-school day reminded me of a similar experience. I went to a Christian school as well. This back during my junior high days. This is a 6th to 8th grade part of the hall. Apparently, my dad didn't turn on the radio to catch school closings or something. This was back before school closings were on TV news and before the robocalls that parents got. He dropped me off at school in a rather icy parking lot. I tugged on the door many times and it would not open. It was locked. I did this slow motion dash yelling, dad, wait, as my father pulled out of the driveway. No. There was nobody around and it was freezing cold. I was a bit panicked because it's really a long walk home. I banged on the door hoping someone might be in there. Thankfully, the first grade teacher happened to be there for some reason. She let me in and told me school was closed due to weather and I didn't know that. I was able to call home and get picked up by my mom, who happened to be home, thankfully. That story, I feel like I can feel the panic. I feel like I can feel Margaret's panic.
Yes. If I remember right, I went in, you know, got around the back door of the school. My mom probably like burned rubber out of there. So I was already like the die was cast, as it were, by the time I figured out there was no school. That feeling of like the car pulling away and running out to, like, that reminds me of this movie Arctic that I saw that I was really into. And without spoiling it, let's just say there are some close calls with rescuers. It's this guy that's trapped in the Arctic. And it's like that feeling of like a helicopter on a hill that's just a little bit too far away and you're screaming and yelling and they land and then they're about to take off again. The stakes were about the same for this listener as they were for this fictional character. But that element of running out and being like, wait, and they're pulling away, that's a terrible feeling.
What about Ann Litt? Do you know Ann Litt?
I don't think I've ever met Ann Litt. I listened to her on the radio many times.
Okay.
I love that anytime we're out of content, I want us to just throw out another name of a person.
I like this game. I also think I'm just getting slappy.
The listeners really don't like this game, but I don't
care. I know.
Okay, I'll keep thinking until tomorrow.
Yeah.
Some names. All right. Was that it, my friend?
Yeah, I think that's it. Sorry. Having trouble closing the show because now I'm thinking of somebody who would be a good candidate, but now I can't think of his name, of course. I can't think of it. So,
Where do you know him from?
Oh, I was going to say Eric J. Lawrence?
No.
Okay. I'm just listing KCRW people for my tenure there, but okay. All right. Figure it out.
I think the East Coast might be the key.
I think so too. West I need Coast, to go back to that, I think. Yeah. Figure this out.
Okay. Well, that's cool. We've got, the good news is we've got about,
how many more shows do we have?
70 or 80 shows before St. Paul. It's August. Although we're actually going to be in St. Paul in like 2 weeks. I need to buy my tickets for that. And then we'll be back there in the summertime for that PRPD. So hopefully we'll have this solved by then.
Yeah.
If you're a person who's listening to this and you know me and Andrew, but this is the first you're learning that we know each other, could you email us? You'll save everybody a lot of time.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, you know what? So actually, you know what? I'm looking at my email right now. Let me see if I can tell you this story really quickly. So, you know, I have a friend. Her name is Kat Solon, right? She may be listening now. She was a listener of TBTL. And when Genevieve and I started doing our commercial podcast after these messages, just like the listener, the dazzling donor today wanted me to
promote. Kat started sending us emails because she makes commercials. As a matter of fact, I see that she just sent me an email right now. She sent me a link to a commercial she just made because she works in in television. And she was blown away the other day. I'm afraid I cannot remember the artist's name, but she is working on a music video for a hip-hop artist. That hip-hop artist on her Instagram stories kind of regrammed something about her music, and the person she regrammed was your daughter, Addie Grace. And it was about...
hilarious.
And the content was about Shrill dropping on Hulu and Addie being excited about it, and this hip hop person retweeted Addie, and Kat was like, I can't believe what a small world it is, like, you know, that all this. And I'm like, yeah, and we also know Lindy West as well, so like the whole thing was very circular. I don't know if that
can I just thwomp one more thing on top
sure,
of that.
Thwomp it up.
Thwomp, there it is. Guess what? Kat made the new animation. She made the new logo for Monkey Paw Productions, Jordan Peele's company run by our friend Wynn Rosenfeld.
I did know that. Yep.
I texted Wynn and I was like, hey, did you know that Kat, who made your logo thing, this really cool animation of the Monkey Paw? I assume it's an animation or she has a Monkey Paw from somewhere. I was like, did you know that Kat Solon was at least at one time a TBTL listener? He said, yes, I totally did. And we've had many a No Mountain Too Tall related conversation as they've been like working on what the question really to me at this point is, do we get any kind of points on any of those movies they're putting out that are we getting any money on Us or Get Out or the new Twilight Zone or any of this stuff they're doing? Because I feel like they're all really excelling and we're just kind of right where we're sort of right where they left us, and I would like us to get some kind
of
back-end
points. We might have backed up a little bit, actually. We might have. I don't even know if we are. I'm not 100% sure.
I was being optimistic, assuming we were treading water. You're like, no, we're further below the surface than we were about a year ago.
Yeah. No, static would be a blessing. Certainly, static would be awesome.
Moving. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I don't know, though.
Just
I have
not
to
in
check
the right direction.
Yeah, I'll check my contracts.
I need to update my resume. Have I done anything on the show that could somehow I could spin it into being film related, trying to get some attention from Monkey Paw Productions?
Maybe. You know what? I think it will. I'm going to call their lawyers. I'm going to have their meet with my people.
I'm going to have Addie call their lawyers because apparently Addie's a much bigger mover and shaker than I am at this point, as it should be. You know, it's like I've passed the torch, like Green Lantern passing the ring on. Now it's Addie's time, and I'll slowly recede into the background.
Is that what happens with Green Lantern?
Did I misremember that? I remember the
cartoon, I don't know.
The Super Friends. My memory is that the Super Friends cartoon, and I could be mixing a bunch of stuff up. And the good news is stuff like this is not something that people have obsessive thoughts about or are obsessed with the details of at all. There's not like entire cons dedicated to these kinds of things. But my memory is that in one of the origin stories of the Green Lantern, it's that the guy who's the Green Lantern was like a normal person. There's like an Air Force guy who crashes his plane. I know that I'm not hallucinating this part. It was something with like a crashed plane where he's giving the ring, this Green Lantern ring, to this guy who becomes Green Lantern.
I mean, again, I know nothing about it, but that makes sense because that would be why there were so many different Green Lanterns, right? Aren't there a bunch of them?
Right, but why was it a guy in a crashed... Okay, here we go. Superhero Origins, the Green Lantern. Can I do this right now? Can I play this? I know that this is going to be unsatisfactory. This is something called WatchMojo.com. Superhero Origins of the Green Lantern. First of all, I bet you it has no talking on it. I bet you it's like... let's see here. Should I just hit play on this, even though it's probably just writing over the screen?
Give it a shot.
Too late. Already did it.
He is a superhero fueled by the green flame of willpower. Welcome to WatchMojo.com, and today we will explore the comic book origin of Hal Jordan, DC Comics' second and most popular incarnation of the Green Lantern. As with most comic book characters, there are often reimaginations and different versions to a character's past. We have chosen to primarily follow the storyline, which unfolded in 1959's Showcase issue number 22, which completely does away with the original hero Alan Scott from the...
I'm already so bored.
I know.
So bored.
You're boring me back to
death. But I did
see
a picture... I know, and I was already dead. Hold on, I think I'm getting... Hold on, let me get to the... I think we're getting to the good part here.
1940s Golden Age Comics incarnation. Instead, centered on Harold Hal Jordan, he was born in Coast City and grew up idolizing his father, an ace fighter pilot for the U.S. Air Force.
Yeah! I'm not crazy. There was a fighter pilot involved.
There you go.
Sadly, one fateful day, Hal and his mother witnessed his death in a horrific crash. As a result, she made her son promise not to follow in his father's footsteps. But as he turned 18 years old, he decided to run away and become a test pilot to realize his lifelong dream of taking to the sky. Many years later, while working for the Air Force, he was testing a flight simulator when a field of energy surrounded him. In a flash, he was transported to the desert, where he came upon a crashed alien spaceship. There, he met Abin Sur, a dying alien member of an intergalactic peacekeeping force called the Green Lantern Corps.
Ah, okay, so I must have blended together him being an Air Force pilot with this dying alien. I knew there was somebody dying with the ring giving it to him. I also feel like a lot of trauma for this guy. A lot of trauma for Hal Jordan in his relatively young life. I hope he was okay.
Well, it seems like he, yeah. I mean, it seems like he used that for good and as, you know, strength, and it gave him purpose. So good for him. Oh, by the way,
yeah.
I'm speaking of going back origin stories. I just needed to close the loop on this. The music video that Kat, the artist that Kat is making a music video for that regrammed your daughter's Instagram story is named Tierra Whack. And she says that
Tierra
she's
Whack.
Amazing.
Her album is, Addie was playing this for me the whole weekend we were in DC. The album is 15 1-minute songs and they're really good.
Oh, that's cool.
Really, it's a very unusual like way to do an album, and it's really kind of cool. I don't know what the album's called, but it's got 15 tracks and they're all 1 minute long. Tierra Whack. People should check it out.
Well, she's
that's funny. I didn't know that
Addie.
She had regrammed. Oh boy, that would make Addie very, I think, excited. She's having this kind of, I don't want to speak on her behalf, but she's having this interesting experience out there where, you know, she's just been such a music fan her whole life and she goes to shows all the time. And now because she's kind of, you know, to some degree a gatekeeper, or I guess you could say a tastemaker, she's now kind of moving from being like the adoring fan to being kind of a, in a way, a colleague with these bands or part of the process, you know? Mm-hmm. So like she'll go to shows and the bands will be excited she's at the show.
Oh, nice.
She's just
like
kind of
dream.
Not that that's
true.
Why she got into doing this, but it's just a different experience for her. And I think it's pretty rewarding to feel like she's part of the music industry in that way. Like she's kind of, you know, if there's a band that she really likes that maybe not a lot of people know about, she now has a way to get the word out on them, at least to some degree. And I think she's really enjoying that.
That's really cool. She's a good
like,
writer,
for instance,
too.
When we were at that music listening thing at that record store, we were talking to afterwards one of the guys running it, and he was asking, I was like, oh, you know, this is my daughter or whatever, which I have to really – luckily I'm aging rapidly now, so I think it's pretty obvious that I could not be her date, but I do feel like I need to still clarify that a lot of times when we're out. And I said, oh, this is my daughter. And then he said something like, you know, what are you doing in DC? And she was like, oh, I work at Tiny Desk. And he was just like, what? Mm-hmm. And then it was like, I just slowly receded into the background of the conversation, which was actually great, but it was just really funny. Cause it's like, that's in the music world, that is a lot of cachet.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's really cool. And so that's an internship she's doing there now, right? But it looks like she might be.
It's an internship, but I think she's going to stick around at least for a little while. When her internship is up, because she's doing such a good job.
Yeah.
So, all right. We have a song to go out with that was suggested by listener Ty.
Yep.
As part of the Dazzling Donor privileges. And by the way, it is a privilege, Ty, not a right. Mm-hmm. That's not true. It is kind of a right because you're donating a bunch of money to the show. The song is These Days by Michael Christmas, which we need to mention has S-H-I-T in the chorus. But I mean, is that
only he says the word,
anymore?
He doesn't spell it. It doesn't seem like it to me.
He says it?
He says the word, he doesn't spell
it. I don't think it seems like it to me either.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like, I think we've actually talked about this on the show before, but I really don't think that I really don't think that that's a swear word.
It really depends on the context, too, though. I mean, if you're just using it as a slang word, that's one thing. If you are telling a gross story about going to the bathroom and you're kind of using it over and over again, I'd be like, that is totally not right for us, you know?
Sure, but I mean, I feel like poop is – I mean, if you swapped – like, for instance, I think maybe the difference is there's not a sexual connotation. So it's not – like, I feel like words that are sweary have to do with genitalia or sex. And maybe I'm overly hung up on those two or overly puritanical on those. But I just feel like – to me, S-H-I-T, which I don't know why I'm just spelling it now like a weirdo, but that word – it just means poop, and we don't think of poop as a swear, right?
We don't. But to go back to it, like, I'm relatively comfortable with you, you know, telling poop stories on this show. I mean, it's your show; you can do whatever you want. But you know, I do think that our show would be very different if every time you use the word poo or one of the funny words we substitute in there, if you were just always saying take an S, like that would be, that would put our show, I think that would make our show very different. There's something very crude about that, right?
Yes, I agree with that.
Yeah. So
okay. Well, so now we're going to play a song that has this word in it a bunch. So just be ready.
Did and it's we decide really on about a, it's a about show title? Bathroom stuff, big time too. It's all about
majorly.
I wrote "When You're Wrong, You're Right." I feel like that might have been a show title before. You said something right. You were spoofing on the Reader's Digest hip hop section, and you said "Life in These United Beats," but before you said that, you said one that I liked more, and I don't remember what it is, but I can listen back later.
I said hip hop in real life, right? Like instead of drama in real life.
Oh yes, I think it was hip hop in real life. Could we do one? Yeah. Is there anything about uniform instead of humor in uniform? Cuneiform in uniform. That doesn't even make sense.
Whoa. What does that mean again? I've seen that word around. I never know what that means.
I think it's like that's an ancient alphabet, right? Oh, God. Why did I say cuneiform if I don't know what
could
it is?
Could we say cruciform in uniform? Does that mean a vegetable that has crowns on it?
Ooh, what is the word?
Cruciferous vegetables. Well, I think cruciferous vegetables are like broccoli and cauliflower, things that have – I think it's called crucifores.
Hmm. I didn't know that word. And I am looking up cuneiform, a system of writing first developed by the ancient Sumerians of Mesopotamia.
Cruciferous vegetables are vegetables of the family with many blah, blah, blah. Cauliflower, cabbage, garden cress, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts are
like
cruciferous vegetables.
I like them all. Kind of hungry.
What about
– All right.
I feel like I need to figure out how to work cruciferous into my rap name.
Oh, man. Yeah. How do you say the word again? I've been avoiding it because I don't think I can say it.
Cruciferous. C-R-U-C-I-F-E-R-O-U-S.
So what if you were like, if your name was Chris, and is that your, Christian is your middle name, right?
Yeah, sure. It would work.
Crunicer Chris. So, that didn't work.
Chris Cruciferous.
Cruciferous.
What is it? Chris Ludacris. What's Ludacris's real name?
It's like, yeah, I don't know. I know
that
he has one.
Could I open for philosophical?
I think you have to.
Okay, it's going to be a hell of a show. I promise.
Well, this has been a hell of a show.
It's been a hell of an ending.
Christopher Bridges. Wait a second. Is his full name Ludacris?
Okay, my bad. Let's see here. The problem was when we lost the audio spackle, we really lost the energy on the program.
We really did. Can't believe Jewel wrote this. One of my favorite Jewel tracks.
All right, that's it. What's okay? We're gonna go out with it. We have the song to go out with.
Yeah,
we may or may not have a title, but we just can't belabor this because the listeners have places to be. We don't, but the listeners do.
Yeah.
So we will be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please have a great Monday. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of TBTL. And until we meet again. Go Mariners.
Yes.
Go eat a bagel. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
These days shit. These days shit so crazy. These days shit. These days shit so crazy. Kids sing. These days shit. These days shit so crazy. These days shit. These days shit so crazy. These days shit. These days shit so crazy. Mooey on his DJ shit. And we gon' make the world go crazy. Do my own videos like Spike Lee do. Life don't slow down, don't get redo. Thunder Jim, right you.
Power out.